This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
I know you get disheartened. We're going to talk about that really quickly. It's going to take time. Tim Burchett is going to join us. Jeffrey Tucker is going to join us. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right. So I'm just like you when it comes to politics and where we are in the country. I have my days where I am bright and sunny. I have my days, my moments where I'm despondent. I'm ashamed to admit this, but I will admit it to you. It's you and me talking. I have days where I carry it home with me, where I'm watching the news, this scandal and that thing, and I walk in the door, wife's there, kids there, and it's like I bring a dark cloud with me. It sucks, right? So I have my days too. I'm not telling you not to have those days. It's going to happen when you care about the country, when you're informed about things going on. It's going to happen, all right? But I'm going to use an analogy I've used many times before, because the more I use it, the more I like it, the more appropriate it seems. If you think about our country, we'll make this just about the federal government for now, as a skyscraper. You've seen a skyscraper. You know what they are. And of course, floors to the skyscraper. And every floor, there are different offices, and some offices are better than others. You got that? Think about our country like that skyscraper. A long, long, long time ago, decades ago, the communists decided they needed to infiltrate that skyscraper. Their intention was to rise from the bottom floor all the way up to the penthouse and occupy every office in between. They wanted it all so they could carry out the communist revolution from inside the government. And for decades, they've been doing it. Obviously, they advance, they get promoted up the floors faster when a Democrat is president. But Republicans are useless and weak, so sometimes they get promoted when a Republican's president, but they hardly ever get fired. So if you've advanced a few floors up when a Democrat was president, Republican gets in and he pats you on the head and says everything's okay. Now, you and I, are discovering every day, courtesy of the Trump administration, we do have to give them credit for this, every day it seems like we open up an office on the 13th floor, on the 25th floor, on the 52nd floor, and we think, oh my gosh, there's a dirty communist in here. Why is this communist in here? And some of them, for the first time in a long time, some of them are being told, pack up your stuff and get out. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing. However, there's a lot of them there. Communists have been working their way through the office, through every floor, and working their way up for decades, and they're not all gone today. They still are there holding critical positions of power, and the truth is it's going to take time to get them all out. You see the latest from James O'Keefe. This is an FBI official.
I am a security specialist at the FBI. So I do background checks, investigations, that type of stuff. I've been working there for 5 years now.
I don't think there's going to be any, like, major arrests, like with Capitol Tower.
No.
FBI.
No. Also, nobody, I don't think anybody would ever go to prison.
Do you think they're going to arrest people, like, that are dealing with the daycare stuff?
I think by the time that case is done, even being, like, looked at, being ready to go to court, Trump won't even be in office anymore. Like, they would most likely be thrown out very quickly. Fraud cases like that, like money stuff,
yeah.
Years, literal years of time. They're going to try and pin it on somebody. I was under Biden first.
Oh, yeah. What was that? Was it different? No.
Way different. Everything was better.
Really? Yeah.
Everything just felt better. People were happier.
That's a communist. He's at the FBI. He was happy under Biden because he could use his powers at the FBI more freely against his political enemies and to aid his political friends. Now, I should note that that man has been walked out of the FBI, but this is not a one-off. James O'Keefe, God bless him, has caught 7 people to date, FBI DOJ officials. And these people, they're not just there sitting in the office, not just there just going about their business. because they're communists, they believe they are supposed to use their position, whatever floor they're in, whatever office they're in at that floor, they believe they are supposed to use their position as part of the revolution. They will admit it on camera.
Christy Noem. So the secretaries can set the priorities for the department,
but they can't actually tell us what to do.
We don't agree with those priorities. There's a lot of room for interpretation in terms of how we interpret what those priorities are. The truth is, we don't let them get in our way.
Okay,
you're,
good.
You're hearing like the real f***ing time, right? From like, we don't let them get in our way. And frankly, that's actually, I would argue, I'm not even being an asshole. I would argue that's my job.
That's my job. My job is to protect the revolution. Not to do what I'm told by the boss, the Trump administration. I'm a communist. I have achieved power in that skyscraper, and every single day, I do whatever I can do to aid the revolution. There's a lot of these people still in the government, and it can get disheartening if you think it's just going to change like that, because the federal government does not work like a business does, small or large business, where you identify a problem, somebody's defined the boss, and too bad, so sad, we'll have security escort you out of the building, you are gone. That is sadly not the way the federal government works. These people burrow themselves in there, and it takes a long time to get them out. We are fighting a counter-revolution. The revolutionaries have been the only ones fighting for years and years and years, working their way up the skyscraper, working their way, worming their way through critical institutions in this country, and it's going to take years to root them out. If you think about the Trump administration, the second Trump administration, as the end-all, be-all, the last chance we have, this is the only chance we have to get all these people out, you are going to be disappointed and outraged every single day. When something good happens, you're never going to be happy. Oh, we still have this, we still have that. When you understand that the Trump administration is just step one, that's it. It's just step one. We have 100 more steps, 1,000 more steps we have to take. This next 3 years, it's just step one. Starting to get this one out. Starting to get that one out. Starting to reform that. Starting to reform that. The counter-revolution is just starting. We are going to have so many landmines thrown in front of us. We're going to have so many critically important battles we will lose. This latest thing with the Haitians, we were finally ready to get some Haitians out of our freaking country and back to the dump where they came from. And surprise, surprise, a Joe Biden judge stepped in and stopped it all. No. They have to stay here. Bring me a new cat. It's disheartening if you don't understand what we're dealing with. We are fighting against a decades-long communist revolution. We are the counter-revolutionaries, and stopping this madness will take time. Not saying don't get angry. Get angry. Get loud. Do not lose heart. All right? Hopefully that did not make you uncomfortable, but I am right. Big spending bill. $1.2 trillion. That's got to have some bad stuff in it. Well, I'm assuming it did because Congressman Tim Burchett of Tennessee voted against it. We'll ask him specifically why. We'll ask him this SAVE Act thing. Is John Thune screwing it up? Is he helping it? But what? We're going to talk to the great Congressman Tim Burchett in a moment. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you about getting a good night's sleep. Gosh, I slept so good last night. Got home, dinner, hung out with the fam for a little bit. And then I thought to myself, I had an afternoon cup of coffee. I should get some Beam. I should get some Dream powder. So I went over, got myself a coffee cup, poured a little milk in it, scoop of Beam, Dream powder from Beam. It's hot chocolate. Threw it in the microwave, pulled it out, mixed it up, and just sipped on some hot chocolate. Went and brushed my teeth because I knew I'd be asleep soon. Eventually, just crawled into bed, gone. And when I woke up, I didn't feel like a zombie, exhausted, groggy. I felt great. You want to feel like that every night? Go to shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. It's natural. Drug-free. shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
The SAVE Act is an abomination. It's Jim Crow 2.0 across the country. We are going to do everything we can to stop it.
Jim Crow 2.0. I was actually just going through a little list here on how many Jim Crow 2.0s there have been. I think we're on Jim Crow like 20.0 at this point in time. Joining me now, wonderful congressman from the state of Tennessee, Tim Burchett. He's also the new chairman of the DOGE committee, which is a very, very good thing. It warms my cold, cold heart. Tim, how many Jim Crows are we on now? I've lost count of it. I mean, segregation's back every other week.
I don't know. I think Schumer's going to cut himself every time he deals one from the race card stack. You know, to me, it's racist that he thinks that a minority person cannot achieve the ability to get an identification, because all we want to do is prove that you're an American citizen to get registered to vote. And then when you do vote, you show an ID. It's a very simple bill. That's all they got. They go to the race card, and eventually, you know, that's why you're seeing minorities leave the Democrat Party in droves. You know, you see some of the strongest members of our conference are people that are of color. You know, my buddy Byron Donald's probably going to be the next governor of Florida. You know, you've got all these guys that are, you know, if it had been 20 or 30 years ago, been a different story, but they're completely our equals, and that's just the way it should be in America. You know, Dr. King said, judge me by the, you know, he's talking about, don't judge me by the color of my skin, but the content of my heart. And I think Chuck Schumer needs to remember that.
It's painfully obvious that they just want to cheat in elections. I mean, we can skip past all the other things. As you pointed out, every black person knows how to get a friggin' ID. Everyone in the country knows how to get a friggin' ID. Everyone has a DMV where they can go wait in line for 3 hours and get an ID. Everyone knows this. So we can skip past all these blatantly obvious lies. Democrats cheat in elections.
If you buy a six-pack of beer, you got to show a freaking ID.
So, the SAVE Act. I know you wanted it in the legislation that passed. It did not get into the legislation that passed. Can you help us understand why?
Yeah, help you understand why it's not there? Yeah, I mean, yes. I had a nice meeting with President Trump, and I mean, you know, he's the deal maker in chief earlier this week, I guess. Days kind of run together. But he, you know, we just don't have the votes in the Senate. Thune actually is trying to work with us, and he can't come out and say, yeah, we're going to pass this thing. But I think they're working on an avenue to get it there, or get something close to that. And I think that's what we need to start looking at more, the positive, because everybody wants me to beat up on Thune, but he just doesn't have the votes. He does not have the votes. You know, we got a one-person majority in the House right now. We are literally one flu season away from, I had the flu during the break. I was laid out. I mean, I cleaned our stalls in the barn. My wife and I, it takes about an hour. Usually it took us over 3 hours because we both having to lay out on a bale of hay. And look, it's the reality of the numbers. And you've got some very liberal Republicans, and Rhino, whatever you want to call them, but it's just the reality of where we're at. And we need to move in that direction. And I honestly believe that Leader Thune is working towards that.
Okay, well, no, we always want you to give it to us straight. We love when you do, so we don't need to come on here and punt John Thune around all the time if he's trying to do the right thing. We do have 51 Republicans, allegedly, in the Senate. Is this kind of, and I'm not even actually calling her out because I understand why she is the way she is, is this a Susan Collins has a tough election thing? Is that the kind of thing we're dealing with here?
I think people are just misdirected. I just don't think they get it. I think they do not realize the fact that Donald J. Trump won overwhelmingly across this country. And in the House and the Senate, we won by whatever you want to say, 2 or 3 percentage points, maybe. And the arrogance of elected officials never ceases to amaze me. I tell you, you better start looking at Trump and his numbers, the deal maker in chief, because what he said resonated with this country. These folks are going to hand us a minority, and then all we're going to see is we're going to impeach Trump, we're going to impeach this person, we're going to impeach that, and that's all they're going to do. They're going to stop everything. They'll reverse executive orders. They'll open the borders back. Grown men in dresses will be back in little girls' dressing rooms. And this is what you'll see. You'll see the more the savagery of this transgender mutilation surgery on children. You'll see more of the aberration of abortion. And it'll just be unglued. I fear we would lose our country as we know it right now. Because you have kids now coming out of schools that are saying, hey, man, socialism looks pretty good.
Yeah, that's friggin' wonderful. You chose not to vote for the $1.2 trillion spending bill. Can you tell us why?
Yeah, because it had language in there for transgender surgery. It had language in there for abortion. I don't work for anybody in Washington, D.C. I work for the people back in the 2nd District of Tennessee, brother. And I don't care. I catch hell on it up here. You know, Bert, you're not a team player and all this. Well, that team playing's what's got us $40 trillion in debt. It's got our schools in decline and all those things. And Trump's trying to reverse all of that. But if we do not get in line of what's going on and what his message is, and we're losing. You know, the big, beautiful bill, I put a tweet out on it this morning. I don't know, I get these premonitions. I don't call them premonitions, but I just wake up mad about something. You know, and we allow the left to define that as, you know, tax breaks for billionaires. Well, how many billionaires you know are working at the 33 Diner in Maynardville, Tennessee, back home? You know, these ladies are not going to have to pay taxes on tips now. They're not going to, but if you make between $40,000 and $60,000, you're going to see a substantial reduction in your taxes. That is the reality. But we've allowed the left, with no proof whatsoever, to define that bill. And it's a disgrace to Trump, because he laid it out there pretty good for us. And we should have, and we've allowed the narrative already be switched. It's very tough to get that genie back in the bottle. It's going to take more than Tim Burchett out there messaging it.
What's the Tim Burchett go-to diner breakfast order? I've always been an over-easy eggs, hash browns, maybe some bacon, pancake on the side if my wife's not there. Just kind of a very traditional thing. Are you a chicken fried steak? What's the Tim Burchett order?
I'm kind of a health nut, so I stay away from the pancakes. So I have over easy eggs, a little runny, some nice floppy bacon, a little crisp on the edges, maybe some good white toast and some butter, and maybe a side of sausages, and of course grits. I'm a grits guy. But I mix it up. I don't put salt on my grits. I put sugar on my grits. For some reason, that's always been my thing since I was a little boy. And that's usually my go-to. I go to the Waffle House. You know, it's funny. You got these people at Waffle House. I've been going there for years. I've never had my order mixed up. Never had my order mixed up. But, you know, I've dealt with professionals at other places. And you never can get anything straight. Freaking Waffle House, they need to be, maybe I need to bring them in before the Doge Committee and just have them straighten out a few things in Washington.
Mm-hmm. They're always polite. They always get the order right. I go in there with my sons, smothered and
they
covered.
Call me darling.
I get my waffles. Of course they do. Freaking wonderful.
Hey, darling,
I love
what
that
do
place.
You have?
What? Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, just wonderful. Polite every time. What? Why are we still funding the Taliban? I know that's not Waffle House's fault.
Yeah, that's my bill. Because we're crooked. Because I'm convinced there's kickbacks. Elon Musk told me that. I hope I didn't. Did I just lose you? Are you still there?
No, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Because we're crooked. These NGOs, so-called non-government organizations, have like 1,000 of them. Then you add the United Nations. And it's gotten a little more complex, but it's the kickbacks. You saw it in Minnesota. $14 billion are stealing, and nobody's even talking about it because we were like, once again, our messaging stinks, and we've allowed the narrative to be changed. We are still sending 40. I saw Secretary of State yesterday at the White House, and he helped me. And now it's moved through the Senate committee. It's going to the Senate floor. And as soon as Leader Thune brings it to the floor, I suspect, and that would be a good messaging bill for Republicans, because Democrats are opposed to it. They're opposed to it. And I would think that would be an easy sell. Why are Democrats opposed to $40 million a week of your money going to the Taliban? A week. And I have a memo on my desk from the State Department. Look, I ain't no fan of the State Department. They need to go. But they even said it's over $5 billion that has gone through these transactions. The State Department says that. So it was a classified memo, and then it got stamped unclassified, and I got my greasy little paws on it. But it's the reality of where we're at. We're giving our money away, and it flows right back to Washington. And I've said, if we want the majority to retain their majority, this country needs to see some crooks in chains, drag their ass out of the Capitol in chains, perp walk them, and throw them in the clink.
Amen. Tim, maybe one day we shall dine at Waffle House together. I appreciate you, sir. Come back soon. All right. Jeffrey Tucker is going to join us. We have a new Fed chairman of the Federal Reserve. Isn't that whole thing confusing anyway? Jeffrey will give us a little bit of an education on that and other things in a moment. Let me give you an education. Not that I'm qualified to do so, but I can help you save money. How much do you spend every month on your cell phone bill? We had T-Mobile before we switched to Pure Talk, and I would get text notifications whenever it was time to pay the bill. And I swear, every month I would look a bit, what? $140? I remember just being floored at how much money we were spending. Eventually, I would think it was over $200. That's bonkers. Pure Talk, when we switched, our bill got cut clean in half. You want to do that? You want to switch to the cell phone company that's run by a Vietnam veteran that shares your values, promotes your values, charges you less. You're not going to sacrifice a thing because they're on the same towers. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV. It's easy. Keep your phone, keep your number. puretalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Fed has lost its way. It's lost its way in supervision. It's lost its way in monetary policy. And all this big money on big fancy buildings is just another indication. And why does that matter? Because what matters most to the Fed is credibility. The Fed has to look like a serious, sober institution.
Okay. I'm assuming Jeffrey Tucker was jumping for joy during all that, but we might as well ask him, shall we? Joining me now, the president of the Brownstone Institute, Jeffrey Tucker. Okay, so that's Kevin Warsh, the new head of the Fed. I know this is your baby, I'll put it that way. What do you think about all this? What do you think about him? Should I be jumping for joy? Should I be hiding under my bed?
I like a lot of what he's written, I have to tell you. He's written some things in the Wall Street Journal that were just fantastic. He's been a great critic of zero interest rate monetary policies we pursued first in 2008 and then again in 2020. And he points out that they're not only inflationary, but that they have tremendous consequences for distorting capital structures, which is a highly sophisticated critique. I mean, so sophisticated, you don't expect a fancy person to understand it as well as he seems to understand it. You know, usually. So he's not mouthing Keynesian cliches or nonsense about countercyclical policies or stabilization measures, or any of that other kind of stuff. So he knows what's what, which will make him culpable when he probably is going to do the opposite once he gets in power. Because, you know, what you notice from Fed board governors is that it doesn't matter really what their private views are. They have a job to do, and their job is to stabilize the banking system and the financial system and the government that sponsors them, regardless of what their private views are. So they always end up this way. I mean, Alan Greenspan was wonderful. Look at his writings. He was great. Then he came to embody a different temperament once he got in that role as Fed chairman. And even Jerome Powell, you know, he's a fascinating character because he didn't like Ben Bernanke's crazy zero interest rate policy. He thought they ruined the Fed's balance sheet. He was desperately trying to unwind all the problems from 2008. And he was working on this in 2019. We saw increases of rates. We saw the Fed trying to get its act together, rebalance its balance sheet, offload some of the bad assets, and everything was going along swimmingly until somebody got to him. And I would have loved to have been a fly on that wall at that luncheon, that three martini luncheon where this happened. But you know, by March, really earlier, as early as January, he reversed his position and then flooded the economy with like $6.5 trillion in fresh money delivered directly into the not the banking system as such, but to the bank accounts of Americans to spend however they wanted. And big surprise, it created over 4 years a 35% decline in purchasing power for the dollar. So this is Jerome Powell. So he acted in ways that were contrary to what he knew he should have been doing. He knew this for sure. And so this is my concern. Once these guys get the job, they do the job as described. And it doesn't matter what they think privately. So on one hand, I kind of want to believe this new guy is he's got the thing, but long experience suggests otherwise, that he's going to do whatever's necessary to keep the banking system afloat, keep the financial system going, acquiesce to political needs at the time. And I assume that's going to mean an immediate rate cut, which could potentially set off a second wave of inflation. Sorry for the bad news.
Outstanding. Okay, we're all just a little jaded. You know what, before we get back into the systemic problems that possibly lead these guys to losing their minds once they get in office, can you explain to every person right now who's currently paying 7-8% on a mortgage, losing their mind about interest rates, why low interest rates would be a problem? I hate to ask you to do a 101 class when obviously you're a bit past
that. I'm glad.
For a lot of people, they don't get this education. Explain it, please.
I totally get it. In fact, I think I might have had an article maybe yesterday, the day before, in the Epoch Times explaining all this stuff, because it actually is very serious. There's nothing wrong with low interest rates. They're great, as long as they can be backed up by a high degree of savings, right? So the point is this. What are interest rates? They are a reflection of two factors, the risk that it's not going to be paid back, and the supply and demand for credit over an extended period of time. So typically your yield curve, if you're going to borrow 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, that introduces more risk, so you're going to pay a higher rate than if you borrow money that you're going to pay back tomorrow, and you've got a much lower risk and a high degree of propensity of payment. But even that will change depending on how much capital is in the system. If there's more capital to lend, you've got a higher supply of credit available, and that credit, that money wants to go to work through the credit markets. So borrowers take money from those, from savers. Savers get rewarded in the form of being paid interest, and the borrowers pay the interest. That's the way it works in a free market with sound money, right? That's great. But if the Federal Reserve goes in and starts manipulating interest rates and lowers them without the underlying justification, that is accumulated capital, more loanable funds, more savings, then you've got a distortion that enters into the structures of production. You get people taking out big loans for a longer period of time, building factories, building homes, big real estate developers, whatever. The product comes available, the expectation is that people are going to have the funds to be able to purchase that which has been produced through these loan markets. And the producer is going to earn a profit in excess of what the interest rate costs. All right, that's the way it's supposed to work. But when the Fed lowers it artificially. It's what Hayek called in the 1930s forcing savings. He called it forced savings, which is a kind of metaphor to say you're doing something that's not justified. There's not enough capital reserves to justify these low interests. So the banks basically end up creating money out of a demand that is not going to be sustained over the long period of time. So it tends to be inflationary for that reason, just because lower interest rates mean more money flooding the economy. And if that is not backed by, you know, equivalent rate of economic growth, which it rarely is, then you're going to get inflationary pressure. So that's the real danger. So here's the problem. The Fed doesn't really know what the interest rate should be, and it doesn't really know what the shape of the yield curve should be, how steep or flat it should be. It doesn't know any of these things. But it moves on the short-term interest, which is the only thing that they can really control, in ways that presume that they know what it's supposed to be, but they're acting kind of like as central planners. This is the position that monetary policy has put them in. So they're acting on information that may be false, maybe they're making stuff up, maybe they're responding to politics. And I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. Warsh is being, that's his name, right, Warsh. He's being named in this position to accommodate the political interest for much lower interest rates. And I just don't see that that's really justified by what I'm seeing in terms of savings. We live in a world of unbelievable debt on all sides, corporations, consumers, and governments. This is not the time to be encouraging more of that.
Trump is out there. Well, there's a clip that many people have seen by now talking about the desire to keep housing prices up. Here he was.
And yeah. Existing housing, people that own their homes, we're going to keep them wealthy. We're going to keep those prices up. We're not going to destroy the value of their homes so that somebody that didn't work very hard can buy a home. We're going to make it easier to buy. We're going to get interest rates down. But I want to protect the people that for the first time in their lives feel good about themselves. They feel like they've, you know, that they're wealthy people. And I want them to understand it. You know, there's so much talk about, oh, we're going to drive housing prices down. I don't want to drive housing prices down. I want to drive housing prices up.
Okay. It's very blunt in Trump's own way. Can you explain what's happening here?
Yeah. During the campaign, he said exactly the opposite. He wanted housing prices to drop 20% and 30%. And that was very encouraging for a lot of people who are locked out of the markets right now. So it's just a little striking that now he's saying exactly the opposite thing. And he's trying to boost the housing industry entirely on the side of the loan markets by driving interest rates down while protecting what he believes are his constituents, I guess, or his generation, more like, by promising that housing prices are not going to go down for them. I don't know. You know, when I listened to that, I thought, you know what? I just don't think this is the job of the president to decide what housing prices should be or not be. I'm just old-fashioned that way. Okay, I just don't think this is the job. But you know, it speaks. So I think when you see Trump speaking about matters of economics, what you're really listening to is a businessman, a real estate developer. And if you remember that, then everything else is predictable. So as businessmen, as property developers, he wants Mar-a-Lago to be as highly valued in the markets as possible. And like when he bought that property, he bought all the other properties around it precisely because he wanted to reduce competition and wanted to create a kind of monopoly, land monopoly for himself, which is great. It's great when that happens in private markets. But this is the way he thinks. And the other part of that is that as a guy, as a businessman who's been dealing with real estate debt all of his life, I mean, he grew up in a generation where if the money was available to be borrowed, it definitely should be borrowed, right? So his whole life as a businessman has been levered up as high as possible. You'd be crazy to not take every bit of loanable funds that have been made available for you and put it into play in hopes that you're going to your profits are going to outpace your rate of interest. So when he talks about Oh, the one other thing. When a guy like Trump is in the real estate markets out borrowing money, he's making the banks compete for his business. So he's out there saying, I want a lower rate. I want a lower rate. I'm good for it. This is a great project. My casino is going to do great. My golf club is going to be wonderful. You'll see, if that bank doesn't give him a low enough rate, he's going to compete it against it. This is the way they do business. So he identifies a low rate as being a good deal, right? So, but it's different when you're talking about an entire country, an entire nation, and the dollar. When he says, we want the lowest rates in the world, it's such a strange statement because he's speaking as like a real estate developer who wants a good deal. But a nation with the lowest rates in the world is also going to be playing with fire because it'll eventually end up with unbelievable inflation. So I'm not exactly predicting a second wave here. I'm just saying that it's a danger if they follow these policies. And there's one other thing I wanted to say about Trump and his attitude as a businessman. So you want as much leverage as possible. You want to be the only player in town, and you want to maintain your real estate values as high as possible. So he's kind of speaking for legacy homeowners, not the people who want to get into the market. The only way you're going to make homes affordable in this country again is with a greater deal of supply that's going to drive down prices. And yeah, that's going to be a problem for legacy owners that think they're rich, but that's just what you need in a market that's going to be more inclusive. One final comment about this. So he talks about how the people who are existing homeowners imagine themselves to be rich. Okay, keep in mind, these are unrealized gains, right? If you bought a house at $500,000 and now it's worth $1.3 million, that looks very beautiful on paper, but your only satisfaction is in looking at Zillow. You're not actually, that's not money, it's not actually yours. Until you put the thing on the market, and I'll tell you something else these high valuations have resulted in is higher property taxes, which is, you know, the biggest scandal that you can ever imagine. Imagine yourself, you know, an aging pensioner with having paid off your house 20 years ago, and you're living happily with no real income stream, but your valuations of your house are going higher and higher. And the county clerk comes along, types some keys on a computer, says, oh, look, your house is worth 30% more than the last time I assessed it. Your taxes are now up. And we're talking, you know, some houses in the Northeast in particular, that the taxes are just beyond belief. I mean, they're higher than a mortgage in other parts of the country. So this could be extremely punishing. Higher property values on your house can lead to essentially, you know, potential for bankruptcy and foreclosure because of the property tax problem.
Yeah, I live in Texas, and while I don't want to complain too loudly so people from California don't strangle me, our tax burden overall is not brutal here, but the property taxes are, when I first moved to this state, it was a second mortgage. When I saw, because they have to weave it into the mortgage and all that, it's like your mortgage doubles for it, and you're looking around thinking, this can't be right. Is this some kind of a misprint? But it's not a misprint at all. And it's just, anyway.
These markets are so crazy. You look at the sticker price of houses, and you think, okay, well, this is a $350,000 house. Well, once you include the mortgage and the taxes and, you know, all the other fees involved, you're going to pay double, triple, and sometimes quadruple over the lifetime of your mortgage for the same thing. So, you know, buyer beware. Sometimes renting is, you know, a better deal. You live in Texas, that's great. I tell you what, in the Northeast, oh my goodness, look up some of the property taxes in the Northeast. People are paying 20, 30, 40, 50, sometimes six figures in property taxes alone. It's unbelievable what people pay. And for what? For police that don't work, schools that suck, roads with potholes. I mean, I can just tell you stories. It is so sad.
All right. I have to ask you about this. Josh Hawley, Senator Josh Hawley, sat down with our mutual friend, Dr. J, said this.
Don't you think to restore public trust is important that we level with the American people, that there's transparency, that we correct the record and say, here's actually what your government did with your tax money? And we were told over and over and over and over, no tax money ever went to Wuhan, no gain of function research. That was a lie. That was a lie from the leaders of NIH at the time. I think those lies need to be corrected, and the facts, all of the facts, however sordid and unpleasant they may be for the institution, need to come out so that the public can say, okay, we've cleaned house here. We've got some confidence in what our own government is doing with our tax money. Don't you agree with that?
I do agree with that. Like after a patient dies in a hospital, there's often a conference, a morbidity and mortality conference, where there's just an honest conversation, what went wrong. I think the United States desperately needs that.
Yeah, desperately. Well, will you make that a priority in your time at NIH?
Happy to collaborate with you and others in Congress to make that happen.
Good. I think it's absolutely.
Yeah.
Hard to complain about that.
Well, that was music to Jay's ears, right? I mean, all day long, he's surrounded by people saying, don't disclose, don't look, don't investigate, don't talk about what happened. So when he sits down, and you saw his exchanges with Bernie Sanders, which another subject entirely. So when he sits down and he hears a senator actually saying something sensible, I can just tell you, you know, quite frankly, as a friend of Jay's, that kind of stuff just warms his heart. He's been desperate for some kind of investigatory commission that's honest and truthful about COVID. He really wants what is increasingly being called COVID justice, right? We need COVID justice. And that justice has to begin with information and truth. We're getting it a little bit more at a time, but it's just not systematic and it's not nationwide. I'm really hoping at some point that the Senate itself will put out a very strongly worded resolution that everything about the pandemic response, not just the creation of the virus, but the way we responded to it with church closures and school closures and brutal business closures and forced masking and then forced injections and plexiglass everywhere and just what a time. I would love to see a clean and clear and relatively short Senate resolution that repudiates all those policies and says, we will never do anything like this ever again. I think that would be a great start. And I know Jay backs that idea too. I think he's doing a tremendous job insofar as it's possible as the head of the NIH.
Jeffrey, I mean, I could always have you on for an hour, but sadly, I must let you go. I appreciate you very much, sir. Come back. Except, I'm talking to me. I'm not even talking to you here. I'm talking to me. Except whatever accountability you get when it comes to the COVID era. I don't know if this happens to you, but whenever I play any of these clips or I watch these things on the news, I can feel my blood pressure going up because I remember when the federal government, state governments, local governments, I remember when they did that to us. It makes me angry all over again. And I immediately think to myself, same thing you're thinking. We're never going to get justice on this earth for all that. So whenever we get a little bit of it, something, it's worth celebrating. I'll tell you what, I'm grateful for this. If it weren't for COVID, I wouldn't have found Chalk, natural herbal supplements from Chalk. Chalk got in front of me because Chalk was out there loudly saying, social distance, what? This is bonkers. What are we doing? Take your stupid mask off. And I thought, who are these guys? Found out they're hardcore anti-communists. And then I found out that taking a male vitality stack from Chalk every day, by the way, they have female vitality stacks, male vitality stack from Chalk every day keeps the doctor away. That's why I do it. It's not that I just am full of energy now. It's not that my mood is wonderful now. I am so grateful that I discovered Chalk 4 years now with a male vitality stack flowing through my veins. Try it. You are 90 days away from feeling like a new person. And when you do see the doctor, he's going to say, oh my gosh, your blood work. Chuck.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And normally in this segment, we bring you a video or a funny story, something to really brighten your day. But honestly, I need to apologize. I was so focused on giving out my free book, jessekelly.com, by the way. Just go to jessekelly.com, put in your email address, we'll send you a free book. Anyway, I was so focused on the free book that I lost sight of the fact it's Black History Month. And that's obviously a huge, huge thing on this show. So we just felt the need to once again honor a civil rights icon. Yeah. We shall overcome. I'll see you tomorrow.